chaos at session's end. We review the 2018 session, what passed, what didn't, and where we go from here. That, plus Andre Carson and Louis Farrakhan, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 16th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
Chaos reigned as the 2018 legislative session came to an abrupt end, and a handful of bills died as lawmakers ran out of time. State law set the session's deadline at midnight, but with a few bills still unsettled, tax legislation, school safety, a Muncie-Gary school takeover bill, and autonomous vehicles regulations, lawmakers pushed things to the limit. That included an effort by the governor to extend the deadline by 1 hour, but legislative leaders questioned that move's legality, and the 2018 session ended without those measures. House Speaker Brian Bosma pointed a finger across the building.
We were here all day yesterday when our Senate colleagues weren't. We were available all day today while they were doing their honoring resolutions.
Senate President Pro Tem David Long says the Senate got its work done.
We just couldn't get to yes on these bills until late, and it wasn't because we weren't here working last night. Our conferees were here working.
Long left open the possibility of a special session to complete unfinished business. What happened at the 2018 session's end? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Joey Fox, Nikki Kelly, the State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and political analyst John Ketzenberger, who apparently didn't get the memo about going on vacation. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Elise Schrock, have you ever seen anything quite like this?
No, not like this. In my earlier days at the State House, I have seen, you know, the special session in 2009, but that was over a budget. That was over a giant piece of legislation. What happened the other night was just, as Nikki used the word, bedlam, over just not going into session with a clear vision, and then at the end of session, not being able to get it together to move some stuff over the finish line at the very end. I mean, it was pretty chaotic to have been there.
Some of these bills that died, some tax measures that in some cases are kind of important, they deal with the federal reform we saw earlier this year, the autonomous vehicles legislation, school safety, priorities of the governor. Is it a bad look for two Republican supermajorities with a Republican governor that these things couldn't get to the finish line on time?
It's not a great look, no. Here's the thing. I think the reason that this is a story and the reason that we're talking about it is because this is so unique in the way this has ended. Republicans have managed the House and Senate really well, and Indiana has a good bipartisan tradition of managing our General Assembly fairly well, especially at the end of these processes. This is an aberration. I don't think any one thing or any one person is responsible for what happened. There's lots of factors that came in where they just couldn't get the business done. At the end of the day, I don't expect this will happen again.
That's a really good bet, I think. Speaker Brian Bosma thinks he knows who and what is to blame for this. He threw Senator Long and the Senate under the bus pretty hard, but is that a fair move for him to make?
Yeah, Speaker Bosma did not mince words on that. And to be fair, although I did see it some in the House too, there just really was no urgency in the final days, even starting on Monday. I don't remember in 19 years of a session where we started a last day without a chamber having voted on a single conference committee report yet. They were haggling over some relatively minor pieces on some of these tax language and alcohol language and, I mean, for a really long time. And in the end, it was just really clumsy. And I can't help but think that some of it was because, A, the Senate was dealing with some internal leadership issues, and B, they lost some very skilled negotiators the year before who had decades of experience. And I think it was a little bit of a tough learning curve for them.
At the end of the day, Speaker Bosma said the Republic will survive. Is this much ado about, in terms of the bills themselves, relatively nothing?
Yeah, I mean, the legislation is while important, not the kind of stuff that's going to cause calamity or bedlam for a long-term period. It is interesting, though, because, you know, there was a time in 1993 when there was friction between the Speaker of the House, who was a Democrat, and the President Pro Tem, who was a Republican, and they were calling each other names. It took a couple of special sessions, but they got that stuff done. What's interesting to me here is that these are people of the same party, and while there has always been intra-party, intramural fighting between the House and the Senate, it seems to have reached a different level this year, and I think it's not necessarily the leadership, one of which is going to absent himself at the end of his term, or at the end of the year. I think what you're seeing is some of what Nikki talked about, the less experienced leadership, but also the factions within the caucuses. They are asserting themselves in these ways. They held up those conference committee reports because they could. Now, the Democrats did some of that, too, on some of the gun issues by, you know, refusing to sign conference committee reports. But it's more interesting to me that you have this intramural fighting within the caucuses, and I think that's what spilled over and caused the overall problem at the end of the session.
Well, you just mentioned it. Two gun issues couldn't reach the finish line at the State House this year, but it really didn't have anything to do with that raucous end to the session. Lawmakers focused on two gun regulation provisions in the session's final days. One would eliminate the fee for a lifetime handgun license. The other would allow gun owners to carry firearms into houses of worship on school grounds, where guns are typically banned. The House sponsor of the final package, Ben Smaltz, spent much of the session's last hours trying to find lawmakers to sign off on the language in both chambers, in both parties. But legislative leaders had each balked at pieces of the measure in the wake of a school shooting in Parkland, Florida, and the final bill never really came close to reaching the floor. Joey Fox, given the current climate, was this maybe the best outcome for this issue this year?
No, I don't think so. I think this bill should have passed. I think these were two common sense measures on guns. We live in a time and in a place when you shouldn't have to pay a licensing fee to exercise a constitutional right. So I think a free lifetime permit for concealed carry after a background check is common sense. I think that if you have a child that goes to a school that happens to be on church property and you're a parishioner of that church, you shouldn't be a felon when you walk on with your concealed carry gun. I think these were common sense measures and they should have passed.
Did lawmakers save themselves some headaches by not passing these or create more for themselves?
Two things. First of all, I'm not sure that having more guns in a school is the answer to the types of problems that the public is asking us to fix. Second of all, the fact of the matter is these gun bills didn't actually go to the floor for full debate. That is the job of the legislature, to debate and deliberate, to listen to their constituents, to carry these through the process, and we didn't get there. And to say that safety measures, if we want to talk safety measures, one was a collateral of the chaos and the bedlam that went down at the end of session when Republicans, who have both chambers and all statewides, couldn't get it together at the end to pass the school safety bill. I mean, that would have given schools more resources for safety audits. It would have given schools a lot more resources, and it didn't happen. They also didn't have the debate on the guns bill, and I think that's just a further breakdown of the process.
There was a four-hour conference committee hearing on the gun bill that I did sit through. So I was there. I can prove it was 4 hours.
At the very end.
Did they save themselves a little by not passing these bills?
I think they saved themselves an issue on the campaign trail, especially this fall. I don't think it would have meant anything in May, but I think the atmosphere is not good for that issue. I do think that there are significant questions. They weren't fully vetted. Four-hour conference committee notwithstanding, there would be very little opportunity to affect that bill in the conference committee, and I think the public saw the strip and insert in particular as a way to maneuver around the process that may be too clever by half. So I think that they saved themselves an issue that could have worked against them in the general election this fall, Republicans, that is.
John talked about this a little bit on the last topic, but this wasn't necessarily what broke down at the end, wasn't necessarily a Republicans versus Democrats issue, was it?
No, it was a Republican issue. Obviously, Speaker Bosma could have thrown the Democrat off as a conferee at any time. He chose not to purposely because he said that he wanted a bipartisan bill. And it was Senate Republicans who were having trouble coming to the table on that bill. So I think just as we've talked about factions inside the Republican caucus, there were people who just said, you know, this is not the fight we need on this day, the same day as a national student walkout on gun violence, to be passing that bill.
Very quickly, Joey, do you think these both come back next year?
Yes, and they should, and I think there will be more.
I think that's probably pretty fair, depending on how the makeup of our state house looks after November.
All right, well, lawmakers did pass many bills before their deadline, including a top priority of just about every caucus, legislation aimed at adjusting the state's workforce development system. Some aren't sold on the two key pieces of legislation passed by the legislative deadline. Democrats criticize the measures as doing too little to help skill up Indiana's working class. One of the bills sets up a study committee on the state's workforce climate, but Indiana Manufacturers Association CEO Brian Burton says the state has done enough studies in the past, and the need for better worker training is already obvious. Manufacturers and business leaders also raised concerns that replacing Indiana's State Workforce Innovation Council with the governor's newly created Workforce Cabinet would cause the state to lose tens of millions of dollars in federal grants. 11th-hour language inserted into one bill gives Governor Holcomb broad latitude to meet federal requirements for who's on the council if the state cannot obtain a waiver. Nikki Kelly, were the workforce development bills, I know you're a huge fan of them, were they a little underwhelming?
Let's just clarify here that I, of course, care about workforce development. It's just, you know, I've been at the State House for about 20 years, and the fact is we do this same dance every couple years under every governor who has their own plan, their own board, and then we repeal that board and replace it with another, and that's what we've done again. And maybe I will be surprised, and it will, you know, really help. They certainly did add some grant programs in there that help train workers through their employers and then also to get new credentials and high school equivalencies. So we will see in the future, but I definitely get the criticism that, you know, several Democrats said on the last day, which is we're really just rearranging the chairs on the deck.
Is that what these bills do?
Yeah, I think pretty much. There were high aspirations, you know, talking about breaking down the silos. How many times have you heard that, Nikki? Talking about finding new ways to be more effective and make sure we meet the needs of the marketplace in terms of employees and helping employers, employees have better. You know, we've heard all of this stuff. You can't tear it all down and build it back up. But I do think that what's happening here is that economic development is changing, and the way that it's done and conducted across the country is changing. And I think that the state needs to anticipate those changes. It's probably a good exercise to go through, but it needs to be done in a meaningful fashion. By that, I mean you have to be very serious about taking away power from some people and investing it in other people. And I mean the bureaucrats or the officials. I don't mean the employees. That's the other piece here. We've got underemployed people in Indiana, and have talked about since Governor Daniels was in office about the only real measure of progress is per capita income. And until you get people who are currently underemployed into careers and into jobs that will pay them a wage that will bump the state's per capita income, then all of this is noise. It needs to be effective, it needs to be taken seriously, and it needs to adapt to the changes. They need to pay attention to what's happening with Amazon, because that's the new avatar, that's the new method. And it's not just throwing incentives, it's not just making sure it's an attractive place for millennials, it's making sure that you are prepared. And it's a lot of things that you have to think carefully about and aren't readily apparent. And we aren't doing that right now as well as we could.
You talk about meaningful is giving, you know, taking power away from certain people and giving it to others when you talk about bureaucrats and officials. And one of the ways you do that is with money. That wasn't, and everybody was very clear, that wasn't going to happen this year. That's going to happen next year in the budget. So is this really more about next year than it was about this year?
Well, I think they could have been more clear about that. Clearly, the Indiana Manufacturers Association, who went in fully supportive, called it something near basically irrelevant by the end. I mean, they weren't happy. You know, if you don't go into the session with a clear vision and set your expectations that in a short session, the fiscal impact isn't going to be very great, you're going to have people who are disappointed. And in this case, Democrats have clearly expressed their underwhelmed view of this, but the Indiana Manufacturers Association, that's business, and that's typically a Republican realm, and they're not happy either.
Yeah, neither was the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Again, they weren't opposed to it necessarily. It was just like, this is all you've got. She mentioned the idea of a clear vision. I think for those of us who cover the State House, I don't think we saw that from the leadership. It was, yeah, we got to work on workforce development, but what that actually meant wasn't as clear. Going forward now, when they talk about, well, next year we're going to do the budget and all this stuff, is that clearer vision going to be required?
I mean, I think the governor was very clear on what he wanted to see on this. I think legislatively, we struggled from the beginning to kind of put this forward. Here's what I think we did get done. So we've taken the SWIC, right, the SWIC, which doesn't actually have any authority, right, to direct agency work, to do things. We've now created a governing body that has some teeth. It can actually make some things happen. I think that is an important, but it is a small but not insignificant victory in this bill.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, what grade would you give legislators for the 2018 session? You can choose A, B, C, D, or F, or Nikki Kelly suggested maybe I should have put incomplete. Last week's question, will Senator Joe Donnelly's support for a bill that rolls back regulations on mid-sized banks help him at the polls? 36% say yes, it will. 17% say it'll hurt him, but most people, 47%, say it won't make a difference. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Democratic Congressman Andre Carson was chastised this week for failing to denounce Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. The spotlight on Carson's ties to Farrakhan came after anti-Semitic remarks recently made by the religious leader following Farrakhan's long history of such comments. The Indianapolis Jewish Community Relations Council denounced the remarks and expressed, quote, extreme disappointment that Congressman Carson, who's met with Farrakhan, won't denounce him. Republicans are trying to tie Carson and Farrakhan to Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly, who counts Carson as a supporter and used the Indianapolis lawmaker in a radio ad for his campaign. John Katzenberger, will Carson's ties to Farrakhan blow all the way back to Joe Donnelly?
Well, I think that's clearly the hope of the people who oppose Joe Donnelly ultimately in the end. And it's the same kind of thing. We're hearing one note basically from the Republican opponents, and that is anything Joe Donnelly might think is bad. Or we will tie him however tenuously we can to anything that we might think Hoosiers will be upset about. It's really a terrible way to run a campaign, but it goes all the way back to Mexico Joe and that nonsense that they started with. So to answer your question specifically, I don't think so. You know, Andre Carson is his own man, Joe Donnelly is his own man, and these tying together of such insignificant and relatively unknown. Everybody has an opinion about Louis Farrakhan. Very few people have any real idea of what he or the Nation of Islam is. So I don't think it's going to be an issue that'll show up in a television ad that'll be devastating or even harmful to Senator Donnelly as he's running in the general election.
Obviously, in any campaign, there's a little element, especially against an incumbent, there's a little bit of an element of throw it on the wall, see what sticks. Is this one that's going to stick or not?
For Carson, I assume you're talking
no,
about?
No, I want to ask about Joe Donnelly first. Is this one that's going to stick for Joe Donnelly?
I don't think so. I mean, there's no actual tie between... I mean,
you
for
have
that
to
work,
a couple steps there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some steps missing there in the middle. I mean, they're not tying Donnelly to Farrakhan, you know. So I don't think it will affect that race at all. And frankly, I don't think it will affect Carson either. I think his constituents are pretty supportive of the job he's doing and don't appear to really be bothered by some of these things.
To that point, is this more of a, should this be a problem for Andre Carson?
Of course it should be a problem for Andre Carson. I mean, look...
Oh, props.
Look, if a Republican had... If this had been a Republican, this we'd be much more specific about what was said. And in this case, Louis Farrakhan said, powerful Jews are my enemy. And he said, satanic Jew, your world is through. This is an anti-Semite who for 30 years has gone on these tirades against the Jewish people. I think it's unacceptable that Andre Carson is unwilling to specifically denounce these comments from Louis Farrakhan, especially though we disagree on a lot of policy issues. The congressman, as both a Muslim and an African American, has been the subject of discrimination before, and I just find it unconscionable that we even have to be having this debate.
Shouldn't this be a no-brainer for Andre Carson? Why not just say these comments are beyond the pale, and I denounce my ties with this person? Because these aren't new either. I mean, these sorts of things have been said for a long time by this leader.
Well, and he has come out, and he says he abhors anti-Semite comments such as these. I think he has been, he has a clear track record of denouncing any type of phobia or ism that's come out. And you're right, they've been used against him. I also think he has a clear record of talking to people who have disagreements with him, whether it's Farrakhan or Benjamin Netanyahu, or even someone who disagrees with him most of the time, like Donald Trump. That's how you build discord or discourse. That's what leaders do. They talk to people, but that doesn't mean you condone what they say, and I don't think he's done this in the case of Louis Farrakhan.
Do you think the Andre Carson, I mean, this is a pretty safe seat for him, this is a pretty safe seat for most incumbents in this state. Is this going to affect him at all in that way?
I don't think ultimately it will affect him, but I do think if an opponent wanted to make that case, he could make that case directly against Andre Carson and force him to answer for it. But I don't think it would hurt him in an election.
He should answer for it.
Well, then maybe Donald Trump should use the same logic when meeting with Kim Jong-un, who he himself has said is a state sponsor of terrorism. I mean, these conversations are happening. I think it's a little bit hypocritical to have a president that's going to, you know, go out and have a conversation like that and then call the congressman, you know, the same for doing the same thing.
Well, Americans for Prosperity of Indiana this week launched its second TV ad attacking Senator Joe Donnelly for his no vote on the federal tax bill. The self-described fiscal conservative group launched a $2 million ad against Donnelly in February for his vote on the tax bill. Now AFP Indiana has dropped another $2 million with a new ad on the same issue, featuring a purported Hoosier small business owner.
Senator Donnelly just doesn't realize the impact that these tax cuts have on the everyday person and the everyday business. Joe Donnelly let Hoosiers down.
The Donnelly campaign argues the tax bill will explode the deficit and that while big insurers get tax breaks, Hoosiers will see significant health care premium increases. Joey Fox, this is clearly the attack Republicans will focus most on, at least right now, not just here, but we're seeing it across the country. The tax bill will be an issue in this campaign, certainly. Does this ad, does this kind of ad serve that cause?
Sure it does. I think the senator voted against larger paychecks for everyday working Hoosiers, and he's going to have to answer for that. People are going to see it in their paychecks, and they're going to wonder, because we're going to make them ask the question, why Joe Donnelly was against that. And I think if his answer is this, you know, rambling on that he's been doing about, you know, why he was against this, I think he's going to have a really hard time defending that position to Hoosiers.
National Democratic groups are now running ads, are going to start running ads in Indiana on the tax bill, but going the other way, saying, yes, he voted against it because of the deficits and things like that. Which side comes out on this in Indiana?
Well, I think you're right. I think Hoosiers are going to be looking at their paychecks, and as quickly as their paychecks come in, they'll be seeing their health care costs go up, and, you know, that's going to cost them. I think it's ironic that it's a fiscally conservative group that has put out an ad like this when it does explode the deficit, as the VO said before. Hoosier generations are going to be paying for this for a long time, and I think that's why Joe Donnelly is going to vote against it, because, or has voted against it, because that affects Hoosier families for generations.
This ad particularly, the woman in the ad, small business owner, appears to be in a medical field based on what she was wearing and what she was doing. Is an everyday working class Hoosier going to see that ad and go, yep, that's me?
You know, I think we are at a paycheck situation here. You know, you get your paycheck at the beginning of the year and they've recalculated based on the advice from the IRS, and there is more take-home pay in your paycheck. And who's not for that? You know, everybody's for that. So that gives Republicans an argument to make. Fortunately for Republicans, that argument will be made until the end of the election, because next year at this time, when people are reconciling their taxes for 2017 or 2018, they're going to find out that many of them underwithheld, and that's primarily why their paychecks are larger. The CBO has looked at this. The income generated, additional income generated for most people, is not insignificant, but it's not as large as it appears. And so we've got a little bit of a bait and switch going here, and Republicans are hoping that lasts until through November.
Very quickly, Nikki, who do you think at the end of this comes out ahead on the tax bill argument, the Democrats or the Republicans?
Well, I think because of what John said, and next year when you see the deductions and exemptions that are gone, and then we'll maybe have to make it up on the other end, perfect timing. They really teed that one up for them.
Well, finally, March Madness is underway as the NCAA tournament begins this weekend. Two Indiana teams, Purdue and Butler, made the big dance, though they could face each other in just the second round. Lee Schrock, who have you got winning the tourney this year?
Well, you know, as we tape this, my team, the Butler Bulldogs, are starting to tee off, so I think you know my plans afterwards. I'd love to see them make it all the way. I do have Villanova winning in the end.
Very quickly.
Ooh, Butler.
I'm going to say Purdue.
You're welcome. Villanova as well.
All right. I'm just going to go for my team. That's the Missouri Tigers. Go Tigers. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Joey Fox, Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you like the podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or I'm getting back on track now. Starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.